I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. We look now at the Dieppe Raid. It's the subject of the 10th book in the Canadian Battle series from the author and historian Mark Zelke. He joins me in studio, as it were, to talk about tragedy at Dieppe, Operation Jubilee, August 19, 1942. The book vividly describes the action, the planning in the run-up to it, the players involved, and, of course, the hundreds of Canadians who were injured or killed on one of Canada's most costly days during the Second World War. The book also serves as a tribute to the bravery and sacrifice of so many, and its publication is timely on this, the 70th anniversary. Mark Zelke has won many awards for his writing, both nonfiction and fiction. This series, the Canadian Battle Series, is the most detailed accounting of any army during World War II ever published by a single author. Tragedy at Dieppe is published by Douglas and McIntyre. I'm very pleased to welcome back to the Plant Online program in studio this time, Mark Zelke. Mr. Zelke, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're both welcome.
It's we met once.
We met once at Alan Twigg's book launch.
Yes, at the night that the sorely missed Chuck Davis.
Yes,
he received an award. But we've been talking. I just looked in the file here. You can see here on my desk here. This is a file of all the stuff that I've had over 6 years that we've been talking to one another.
That's right.
War of 1812 was the first book that I talked to you about, and then First World War, and now the Dieppe and the Second World War. You've written, how many books have you written? Have you kept
track? It's 26 books in all.
Yeah,
starting in 1992. So
wow.
And getting a little more speedy as the years went on, but now it's slowing down a little.
Yeah, but it's a great list of books, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's it like to look at, say, all your books on a shelf?
It's quite an experience because looking around your office here at all the books on your shelves, you sort of have like one of those shelves would be just the
just
books,
yours,
my
yeah.
books. Yeah, I'm sort of crowding my partner Frances Backhouse is a writer as well, and I'm kind of crowding into her bookshelf now.
It's funny, you know, I was thinking about Frances because I'd actually read her when I took a social history course at UBC, and one of her books was on the syllabus 1 year, so it all comes full circle, doesn't it?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so let's talk about tragedy at Dieppe. The motivation for this raid, it happened August 19th, 1942, but I guess they planned it.
The planning started in January was the, of 1942 was when they first, Dieppe first actually went on to somebody's planning chart, and that was Combined Operations, which was a British organization whose mandate was to carry out raiding of the against the Germans in Europe. And so there was a new group of people who came in to head up Combined Operations, and that was led by the newcomer Lord Mountbatten. And under him was Captain John Hughes Hallett, who was a naval officer. And Hughes Hallett held a planning session in January where they looked at, well, what are we going to do for the year, basically?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Dieppe was first come to the fore. They decided that it was close enough to England that they could get air cover over top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was close enough to England that the ships could make the crossing of the English Channel without heavy storms, probably, and without the soldiers becoming so seasick that they would be unable to function.
So this was a British British initiative, I guess. The Russians and the Americans, did they have a say in terms of what they wanted to accomplish?
Not about what they wanted to accomplish, but there was the British were under incredible pressure from Stalin to do something. He wanted a second front to take pressure off of his forces, which were trying to hold back the German invasion of Russia. And so he was putting on a lot of pressure, and then the Americans, who were down relative newcomers to the war, because they had just come in December of 1941, they were very gung-ho, and they just sort of wanted to go ahead and invade France right across the English Channel. And the British knew that that wasn't feasible, so they kind of had to come up with something to get everyone to get off their backs.
So they wanted, the Allies, wanted to go in here, raid Dieppe, take on the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, everything went wrong. The plan went awry. By the way, what did Canada want in all of this? What was their say?
They didn't have a lot of say in the initial planning of the raid, but what it was there was a lot of pressure in Canada for the Canadian Army to do something. Mm-hmm. They had been sitting in England since 1939, September, October 1939. They arrived, started arriving. And there were, so there were thousands of these guys, and they were all just in England, and in the Canadian mental media press was... They were doing nothing. They were just sitting there. They weren't training. They were training, but they weren't fighting. And they wanted to see the soldiers fight. And some generals wanted them to see them fight, too, particularly General Harry Crerar. And so Crerar used a lot of his connections within the British forces, British High Command, to bring the focus around to looking at not using a British unit, but using one of the Canadian units. And Mountbatten actually didn't want to do that. He wanted to use the Royal Marine Division because they had some training in amphibious landings and that. But the politics lined up. The Canadians were selected, and then we were then committed to being the leading force in that raid.
Now, Churchill, what was his part in all of this?
Churchill's role was very much focused on trying to assuage Stalin's desire for the Second Front. And to also please the Americans. He knew the Americans wanted desperately to just go straight to Berlin by the shortest route, which was, and Churchill wanted very much to get the Americans committed into North Africa so that he could win the African campaign. So he had to kind of, at the same time, he had to give them something. And so he was an active participant in trying to get the Dieppe raid going forward. He was at a conference with Stalin, and not in Yalta, I can't remember exactly where it was, that he flew there from Casablanca, and he sent us a coded telegram back to London asking, you know, was Operation Rutter, as he called it at that time, because that was its original code name, and was it going to proceed, and he wanted very much for it to happen, and his secretary sent back that, yes, Operation Jubilee was going ahead, and that was the code name for the Dieppe raid.
So take us to the 19th of August. In terms of, because you start the book off with all these numbers, how many troops were committed, how many were injured, how many came back. So just to sort of paint us a picture of what was happening that day.
Okay, well, you had about 8,000 Canadians, Canadian and British, primarily troops.
But the majority were Canadians, right?
Yes, that's right. Almost 5,000 of them were Canadians. The rest were mostly British commandos and also British Marines and British engineers who were going to be helping out with the demolitions and stuff in the city itself and on the other beaches. So the forces, we've got the Royal Highland Light Infantry and the Essex Scottish, which are two infantry regiments. They landed in front of Dieppe. South Saskatchewan Regiment and Queen's Own Cameron Highlanders landed to the right at a place called Pourville, and that was called Green Beach, was where they landed. And then the Royal Regiment of Canada landed at a terrible little beach called Puise, which was on the left-hand side. And then the commandos, British commandos were landing on the far right and far left. Mm-hmm. And that was the sort of how the forces went in, with the Calgary Tank Regiment landing all of its tanks right in front of Dieppe. That plan was basically the inspiration of Bernard Montgomery. Mm-hmm. The original Mountbatten and Hughes Hallett's plan, they hadn't wanted to put any forces on the beach in front of Dieppe. They would have rather landed all on the flanks and just pushed inland to an air base that was actually behind Dieppe and take out that air base and divisional headquarters that they thought were there and then withdraw. They actually didn't want to be involved in the streets of Dieppe at all. And Montgomery said, well, you know, it's not going to make a media splash, basically, if we do that. Mm-hmm. No one's going to think, well, what was the point, especially if it goes awry.
Yeah.
So we have to land in front of Dieppe. And he also was worried about the tanks. He didn't think that they could make it across a number of rivers that had some fairly tenuous bridges. to get to the objective. So he wanted to go into Dieppe. The tanks would move through the town and out to the air base, where they would meet up with the Queen's Own Cameron Highlanders, who would do the flanking movement from Pourville.
Yeah,
and that was the big concept of the raid.
Yeah, and so in at this point, the Germans, were they better equipped? Did they have a better idea of what was going to happen, say, or what happened here?
They were expecting something to happen because they had been waiting all summer for a raid, because they figured the Allies would have to do something, because they knew the pressure was being put on by the Russians. Their intelligence told them that. And so they were looking for a raid to fall somewhere. They just didn't know where exactly. Dieppe was a logical choice, so they were looking at Dieppe as a possible one. The divisional commander of that particular division that was at Dieppe was a very he was a very stiff and rigid and authoritarian commander, but he was also one who really had his men working hard to get ready for any kind of invasion. So that division was very well equipped and very well prepared to stave off a raid. They had been working on their fortifications, which were very well established. And it was a much harder nut to crack than Allied intelligence had led the Canadians to believe. They really did think that they had a very good chance of just going in there and catching the Germans by surprise and punching through to their objectives. There was not a lot of expectation of failure.
Mm-hmm. So it obviously, the Germans succeeded. They took down a lot of Allied forces that day. What's the Major General Ham Roberts? What's his story?
Major General Ham Roberts was the commander of 2nd Division, and so he was the person ostensibly on the Canadian side who would be the major planner of the details of the raid. Ham Roberts, though, wasn't much of an organizational kind of general, so he handed the job over to Brigadier Church Mann. And so the big plan, which is like the nuts and bolts of, you know, such and such a squad will land here and it will be provided with this much ammunition and that. That was Mann's plan, who put that all together. It ran to hundreds of pages. And Ham Roberts had... he had reservations about the raid from the very beginning, but he was a loyal soldier and never spoke out really against it. And so went ahead with the ideas and accepted the ideas that were handed to him by combined operations on how it would proceed. And as a result, in the final planning stages, when the officers were all gathering together and he was briefing them, and it's a little bit, whether it's an apocryphal story or not, nobody's ever been able to prove it, but there's many of them. There was somebody in the room who said it's going to be a piece of cake, and Ham Roberts was credited with being the person who said that. And it was a common enough expression within the British Army at that time. It was going to be everything. If something was going to be easy, it was going to be a piece of cake.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it was often, sort of like the other expression was, it'll be a walk in the park.
Yeah.
That's what they would say. And so when the raid went awry and was so disastrous, Ham Roberts then... was left as the person that many of the veterans blamed for what had happened, and they all remembered this alleged piece of cake expression. So when he, for the rest of his life, on the anniversary of the Dieppe raid, he always received a stale piece of cake in the mail, and it was never attributed to who was mailing it to him.
Really, yeah. Well, it's one of those great stories that's in this book. Sort of to play armchair general, could it have been conducted better, say, for the Allies?
I think if the original plan that had been put forward by Hughes Hallett and the combined operations planners had been instituted rather than the direct frontal attack on Dieppe, there is a chance that they could have achieved their objectives if they had just kept the objectives to getting to that airfield and that headquarters, which in reality turned out not to be there. It had been moved. They could have at least achieved getting to where they were going to go. Because as it proved, the bridges that they'd been worried about that wouldn't be able to handle tank traffic proved to be quite much stronger than they had understood from aerial photography. And they would have easily supported the tanks. And so they wouldn't... Because they achieved basic surprise at Green Beach in Pourville. The two regiments there did get ashore. The Queen's Own Camerons actually managed to get almost to the airport. They did go quite a bit far inland, but the tanks didn't get there, and so the infantry was left with nothing. But they had a few machine guns and some light mortars, but they had nothing that they could fight the Germans with. So they ended up having to withdraw back to Pourville.
Mm-hmm. In terms of how Canadians remember Dieppe. Do you find that there's a consensus on how, over time, over these last 70 years, say, we've...
No. It's actually remained to be an extremely controversial operation.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who, myself, I'm amongst the camp that I believe it. The raid achieved nothing. It was a tragedy. That's why I call it tragedy at Dieppe, because it failed to meet any objective that was there. Like, not one single objective was achieved, and so it was a very bad defeat. But you have other groups, particularly amongst veteran groups, who don't want to have the word defeat attached to Dieppe. So they seek some sort of reason, some sort of rationale, some sort of that something was gained. And they move particularly to the camp that there was many lessons learned in the Dieppe raid that then could be applied to the successful June 6, 1944 Dieppe, or
D-Day,
Normandy raid invasion. And I looked into that extensively, and also Colonel C.P. Stacy, who wrote the official histories, looked into it extensively as well. And we both came to the same conclusions as you looked at it, that really all of the things that were the supposed lessons learned would have been things that you could have learned by just doing map exercises. You didn't even have to do an invasion. And other things like the floating harbors that they used at D-Day, called Mulberries, those, in fact, were already had been, it was Winston Churchill, actually, who had thought of them. And he thought of them months before the Dieppe raid, so they were already working on that idea. So I don't think there's any compelling argument that would justify the raid in terms of we're going to learn these lessons.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you approach Dieppe as a historian, as a writer? There have been books written about Dieppe in the past.
That's right.
How do you bring it to 2012?
Well, a lot of it was I was able to access quite a bit of documentary evidence written at the time of the raid, amongst the planning documents and reports afterwards. There were a lot of interviews that were conducted with the soldiers who did return, and also as the war went on, various soldiers got exchanged with the Germans for illness or whatever reasons. They would exchange a German for a Canadian. And a lot of those documents had been accessed by other people, but not all of them, because a lot of them had sort of over the decades been rather misplaced in the archives. And as in the last couple of years, there had been a new finding aid that was developed. So I was able to access documents where, you could open them up again and you could sort of see, oh, the only person who's been in this document before was C.P. Stacy back in 1949.
Wow.
And so you start seeing new material, interesting takes on, and there's a little bit of additional information. There was another covert commando unit that did go in, and their job was they were supposedly going after secret documents, and some people say they were going after the Enigma machine. And there was evidence that they were floating around in the background as well. Recently, a Canadian documentary, Canadian British documentary, said that this was the whole reason the raid took place. When I can't buy that, because it's too, you would, to use thousands of men to get five men into a little headquarters doesn't hold up to me. And also I'm not convinced that there would have even been an Enigma machine in that headquarters, because it was such a mundane little naval headquarters. So and that's the thing, is in 5 years, there'll be more theories.
Yeah.
Because it's just one of these things. We keep chewing on this one because Canadians did lose, and we want to know why. And there's not a convincing answer as to why.
But it's worth remembering, right?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think what I look at particularly is not that the factor that the Canadians lost there, but the incredible valor of the Canadians during the fighting there. They achieved more than they really should have in going up against the Germans the way they did. You know, there were some units that small units that actually got into Dieppe. They got off the beach into the town. It was improbable that they could have even achieved that, but they did. And then at Green Beach, the Canadians, Cameron Highlanders particularly, you know, managing to get several miles inland against incredible opposition. You know, I think that's worth remembering for sure.
And there is a memorial there now at the mm-hmm. beach, right? And then there's a memorial in Windsor, is that right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Two identical ones in honor of the Essex Scottish Regiment. And there's memorials in honor of each regiment at their particular beaches. But the one in that's honoring the Essex on the Dieppe beach is quite unique because of the way the light at a certain time on August 19th shines through the monument and illuminates a Canadian maple leaf on the ground. And then the same one does the same thing in Windsor at the same time of day.
Yeah. Yeah, you described that so beautifully in the book. Say, what is the in terms of the archives and what, say, the Germans have on this? I mean, did you find there was material for you to look at?
There's a little bit of material. The Germans did do a number after the thing. They did a number of analysis of the raid. And I draw on one of those quite a bit because the divisional commander, his analysis of the raid was, he was as well, thought it remarkable how well the Canadians had done against his men, considering the impossibility of the odds, mm-hmm. as he even described it. And so we see that kind of material. The biggest thing that the Germans brought to it is the majority of the photographs that we have of the Dieppe raid were taken by German forces, because there were, at the time, there was about six German photographers in Dieppe by chance. They were there to photograph the defenses that the Germans were preparing there for a documentary that they were going to put together. And so all these photographers were all there, so they were able to take pictures immediately after the raid. And so we, you know, like the photograph on the front cover of the book is one that was a German photographer.
How long does a book like this take?
It took me this book about 3 years. I've been working on it. I sort of, I was doing another book at the same time as I was doing the research for this. So it took quite a bit longer than the other Canadian Battle Series books because I had to do quite an extensive amount of research in England at the Kew archives and research in the archives in Ottawa as well. And I also, of course, had to go to Dieppe and spent quite a long time there just looking at the beaches and examining them and coming to, you know, really understand what the Canadians were up against.
Yeah, and then being there, I guess that gives you a context that you wouldn't get, say, from you read Colonel Stacy or you read your book, right?
Yeah, that's right. I find that you have to do these books, I have to go to each battlefield and spend as much time as is necessary to see the whole battlefield. Dieppe's a small battlefield, so it's not that hard. You can see it in 2 or 3 days of just, you know, going around easily, and well, even one day if you push it.
Yeah.
So that is very important, and it's true. You know, you stand on the beach at Puys particularly, there's still a German bunker on the edge of that beach, and you can stand up on top of that, and you're looking down the seawall, which is where the Royal Regiment ended up taking cover, and there's not an inch of cover there, because this bunker was, and its machine guns were able to fire straight down the entire length of it, and so the Royal Regiment never had a chance, and you really see that when you're visiting them.
Now, I understand the Rhineland, that's the next book?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so this book, it's published now, and you're out promoting it. You got busy November, I understand, right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, so when do you, I mean, have you started the Rhineland book yet? Or?
I've got most of the research done. I haven't started writing it, and we're scheduling that one for publication in fall of 2014, so I'm slowing down a bit on the pace of the writing and giving myself a little more time between books, so there'd been a tendency for a book to come out within a year or a year and a half of each other, and I'm moving towards 2 years between.
Yeah, Juno was last year, right?
Breakout from Juno, yeah.
Do you still find it fun doing this after all these years?
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, this is the 10th book, and I'm embarking on the research for the 11th, and I still find it, to be able to put together the accounts of the entire battle of each these battles, because most of the battles have not been written about in any great detail by hardly anyone.
Yeah,
they've been generally most of our Canadian history, military history, is focused on, you know, they'll take like the Northwest Europe campaign and take it from D-Day to the fall of Berlin.
Yeah,
and so they scurry along, and I'm slowing right down to the soldier's pace in these books, and that's so to be able to put together that story and decide, well, which soldiers am I going to focus on, how am I going to tell that, you know, okay, this particular day of battle, what happened there, and who do you look at to tell the story? And so it's kind of like fiction, very complicated fiction, because the characters change all from one page to another.
Yeah. Do you find that when you, in the course of writing these books, collecting all the materials, that you're almost there, that you're reliving this?
Yes. Yeah. That's what I have to try and do. Yeah. Is because I need to get really inside the minds of all the many cast of characters.
Yeah. Do you still write fiction, by the way?
I've been trying to. There's been so much. It's been so busy with the nonfiction, I haven't been able to do as. I've got a novel underway, but it sort of festers over in the corner, and it is another one of the mysteries. So my agent and I are hoping that I'll get it done, and we can get a fourth Elias McCann mystery out.
Yeah. So how many books do you think this series will run?
I'm hoping it'll go to 13, because there's the Rhineland campaign left. There's the coastal ports, or the channel ports, which is stepping back again into after Normandy and the advance up to the Scheldt estuary. And then there's the Battle of Hong Kong. And those are the three main things that are missing in the series. So to conclude the story of the army in World War II would take three more books.
You've done a great service chronicling the Canadian military in this war, as well as in your other books. These are books that I think we'll all be reading years and years from now, and we'll be looking at. It's a real pleasure to have you here. I appreciate you coming in from Victoria to do this, and good luck with this book, Tragedy at Dieppe.
Thank you, Joseph.
You're very welcome. Zelke.ca is the website for more. The book is called Tragedy at Dieppe, Operation Jubilee, August 19, 1942. It's published by Douglas McIntyre. Its author, Mark Zelke, joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.